Be washing cars this Saturday, June 28th, to help finance the third annual Back in the Day reunion, a celebration of Vancouver's Black history, which will happen in August. Former classmates from Vancouver's first African-American families who moved to Vancouver in the 1940s planned the first reunion in 2012. The car wash fundraiser is scheduled this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the parking lot of Lord's Gym, 2410 Grand Avenue at 4th Plain Boulevard in Vancouver.
This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're listening to music by David Ornette Cherry from his This Is Different CD. Find out more at davidornettecherry.com. Portland is a Shakespeare town. There's no denying that. And it's no surprise that there are dozens of companies producing the Bard's plays this summer. Now, Portland's theater community has even made a commitment to produce every Shakespeare play, sonnet, and narrative poem within a 2-year period. Yep, that's right. But the longest running Shakespeare company in Portland is the Portland Actors Ensemble. And they do Shakespeare in the Parks. And they're entering their 45th season, and they're presenting two culturally innovative outdoor productions this summer, Antony and Cleopatra and A Midsummer Night's Dream. We'll be hearing more about that today. And we'll hear another segment from our series of original radio stories from graduates of Mount Hood Community College's Integrated Media Program. Today, we present an audio diary by Sean Lewis Phillipson. It's titled, My Date with Asperger's. Plus a ticket giveaway to Invasion, the much-acclaimed, hilarious, and subversive show that satirizes our cultural prejudices. It's at Badass Theater, who brought back their hot ticket show to Milagro Theater in Portland. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the studio today is director Elizabeth Huffman.
Hey, good morning. Dee Mae, good morning.
And actors Andrea White.
Good morning.
And Matt DiBiasio.
Good morning.
Good morning, Matt. And they're from the production of Antony and Cleopatra at Portland Actors Ensemble's Shakespeare in the Parks. And I want to welcome you all to Stage and Studio. So, Elizabeth, yes. You've put some innovative touches on Antony and Cleopatra. And you kind of went back to your Arabic roots and did a ton of research on time periods and cultural traditions. You want to tell us about that journey?
Well, I think the Egyptian court you're going to find is as I was really interested in the cultural beauty of the Arabic culture, and it's actually not just the Egyptian culture, because it was a melting pot then. It is a melting pot now of a wide variety of Arabic people.
It was very cosmopolitan,
absolutely,
wasn't it?
And so we wanted to. The actors have learned some Arabic. Yes, they're speaking Arabic in the production, and we have many costumes that are actually from the Middle East that are worn today, and yet we built on top of that to create a very highly theatrical world filled with poetry and music, live music and food and laughter and a lot of passion. That is the Middle East.
Well, you've also set it in the contemporary days too, or contemporary time rather than the historical.
Yes. It has a sense in Egypt of a deeper culture, that the costumes themselves, even though they are worn today, they are not the kind of clothes that we regularly see. These are the kind of clothes that are worn more in the folk world and the Bedouin culture, whereas the Roman army is very paramilitaristic.
Well, so how did you come to make that decision then, rather than setting it in historical Antony and Cleopatra
times? I was interested in the relevance of this play, and a kind of similarity that existed in the events of this play. Rome was approximately 300 years old, and they invaded a country that was thousands of years old. We in the United States have occupied both Iraq and Afghanistan, and there are many similarities in the kind of way we view the Arabic peoples in those countries, and politically a very aggressive a very aggressive agenda to control these areas has not changed today. So I was interested in seeing how this play supports that, and I think it does.
And you want to make a parallel or a connection to what we're going through now?
I think it makes itself, yes. And I also ask the question, what would happen if two very powerful people, public people, from vastly different cultures and ideas and ideologies would fall in love, and what would happen? And it's almost like an adult Romeo and Juliet. The war happens.
Right. The bigger, the stakes are way bigger.
Yes.
When they're political figures.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts with Elizabeth Huffman, director of Antony and Cleopatra. And I'd like to bring the actors, Andrea White and Matt DiBiasio, who are playing Antony and Cleopatra, into the conversation here. They're all from, actually, I want to give some back announce here. They're also from the Portland Actors Ensemble's Shakespeare in the Parks production, and it's performed free all over Portland area through June. And you can, actually, what is the date that you end on? July
29th.
July 29th, thank you.
And 26th, you can, I'm sorry, July 26th.
July 26th, and you can find that schedule at portlandactors.org, and I also have that info at stageandstudio.org. Andrea, I have to say that I really love the attention to cultural details, especially with your character as Cleopatra. So, you know, you are very much Arabic in this production, shall I say?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So how was that journey, going through learning about that culture and, you know, embracing that?
Well, I had a really great teacher, the director, and...
And Isra.
Elizabeth brought in Isra, who worked with us on our dialect.
Oh.
And just how women in the culture respond to... frustration and love and passion. It's very passionate, the Arabic culture.
Well, so, I really like the attention to detail, Elizabeth, and you brought in a consultant too, and that often doesn't happen, you know.
Right.
People appropriate culture, and you really took pains to do the research and to bring in people who could actually help people to understand
Isra
in
Hassani
a very real way.
Yeah, Isra actually did the translations as well. We worked for a long time on translating some of Shakespeare. We brought in, there's also additional text from Cahil Gibran in the show, as well as from John Dryden, and she taught the actors how to speak the Arabic, which was quite a journey.
Well, I'm really curious about that. What things did you learn in Arabic?
Well,
a lot of swearing.
Well, we won't do that part. We won't do that. Any love terms of endearment or anything like that?
Yes,
habibti.
There's various. All of the Egyptian court from time to time speaks in Arabic, and it gives a real flavor and authenticity to this world that we're trying to create. And they've been really really
yes.
embracing it.
Is that what that means?
No, hudehudehed is give me.
Oh.
She's trying to give gold to the soothsayer. And it's really fun. The cast really is enjoying speaking Arabic.
Well, I love the pictures that I've seen with the traditional, I don't want to say costumes, but traditional clothes, you know. And are they still worn?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
They're beautiful.
They are.
They're
beautiful.
And Andrea looks gorgeous in the photos. Take a look at stageandstudio.org, seriously. Look
they're
at these
really
photos.
Comfortable, too. They're amazingly comfortable.
I was going to ask you, since it's an outdoor production, do you think it'll be okay? I mean, not too warm to wear?
Oh, no. I have no problem with being too warm. Quite honestly, it's the opposite.
Well, tell us about your Cleopatra. Who is Cleopatra in this production?
She's a complicated woman, but she's extremely passionate. She loves deeply. I think she's extremely cunning and smart. And she is able to see the whole picture laid out in front of her, whether she sees the whole picture laid out in front of her, whether or not she makes the best choices with the information, you know, it's up for debate. But she's so passionate. It's really nice to explore a character that loves so deeply.
That loves.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. So, Matt, of course, you're Mark Antony, and you go through a huge character change.
Because
of Cleopatra. I mean, it's almost like a personality change in some ways.
It starts at the very beginning of the play.
Yeah.
He's pretty head over heels for, I guess you could say. It's definitely an interesting love. There's an element of danger to it. Mm. You know, I'm not sure if it's because they are who they are, their personalities, or if it's because of their political circumstance, but that's something that's definitely been interesting to explore and definitely been interesting to see where it goes as the events of the play unfold, how their love actually becomes, you know, the object that's kind of used against them and causes their own demise because of some of the foundations of it. It is a journey. It is definitely a journey.
They don't seem like their love, they consider as much of the political circumstances that their love is bringing about.
It's very reckless.
They kind of throw caution to the wind.
Very
it really
reckless.
Is. Yeah. And they just go for it,
I guess,
right?
Sid and Nancy. You know, that might be a little extreme.
It does become destructive, that's for sure. So it's intriguing that Portland's theater community is committed to producing, you know, the Shakespeare within a 2-year period, and it's going to start. Every Shakespeare sonnet and poem and play. I mean, it started with the 450th anniversary of Shakespeare. Birth, and it culminates at his 400th anniversary of his death. So this is the only Antony and Cleopatra, though, that's going to be performed in that 2-year period. Is that right, Elizabeth? As far as you know?
I have no idea. In Portland.
In Portland. We're talking about Portland.
Right, right. I'm not sure that anybody else is planning to do it. It's a big play.
Is it a big play? How many people do you have in it?
Well, I've got 15.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But I also really reduced down a lot of the characters to try to make it more
accessible. Because it could be more if you did it that way. So, what I love about Shakespeare in the Parks is the direct connection that you have with the audience. So you guys started last weekend and you opened. How is it to perform in this play in an outdoor setting for you two?
Exhausting.
It really
absolutely
is.
Absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, that's what I would think, because it's a real physical and vocal workout.
Yes, on voice and body, for sure. But it there is a wonderful element of the elements. So as it starts to get dark and the moon comes out and the sun goes down, there's something magical about that.
Oh, so you are doing it at night then?
Well, we start at 7.
7,
so
right.
By the time it's over, they have a long journey. So by the time it's over, it's
that helps a lot
dark.
Rather than a 3 o'clock in the heat of the day kind of production.
Yeah. Although right now with the weather, I'm
You wonder what's going to happen for sure. So is it hard to handle the love scenes with, you know, barking dogs and, you know, people going by going, what's that? Does that happen? Has that happened?
I mean, I guess you just have to trust that she believes me even though I'm shouting 3 inches from her face.
Yeah, that.
And I believe her even though she's shouting 3 inches
from my
face.
That's a challenge.
That was very
interesting.
Quit
yelling at me, honey. Just kiss
to
me.
To get used to discover intimacy at, you know, out in outside voices.
Right. That is good. That's called acting.
Yes.
And it's great that you both have that. So it's in the time remaining, I also want to talk about A Midsummer Night's Dream. But before that, what are your favorite lines from the play, from your characters? You've been thinking about that as you go through the text, and I'm sure it changes on a daily basis, but Matt, do you have a thought on that?
You wouldn't normally think of Antony as an animal lover, but he's got this great speech at the end of the play where he's pointing out clouds and noticing that they're kind of in the shapes of different animals, and at the end of the speech he says something like, that which is now a horse, even with a thought, the rack dislimns and makes it as indistinct as water in water, my knave. Now thy captain is even such a body. And it's this kind of, you know, this great metaphor for his demise, you know, seeing playing the cloud game, you know, and basically watching these shapes break apart just as he is breaking apart.
It's fantastic. It's a metaphor for what he's going through at
that
time.
Yeah,
beautiful. How about you, Andrea?
I think my very favorite is I am fire and air, all other elements I'll leave to baser life, which she says as she is about to put the snake on her breast.
Yeah.
And go meet Anthony again.
Beautiful. There's so much to work with, isn't there?
There is so much.
We could give you the whole play.
Could. Well, we'll have to see it. We'll have to see it. So I want to bring in Anthony. He's here. Artistic director Michael Godsey, who's been hanging in the wings here, and he's going to be talking about Midsummer Night's Dream, which runs from July 12th through Labor Day at the parks all around town. Michael, this production of Midsummer promises to be culturally diverse. How is that going?
Well, we've sort of taken the mix of people that you find in Portland, thrown them into Athens and the Fairyland, and see what happens. So it's not as culturally diverse as Antony and Cleopatra by design, but it's got its own interesting elements going on as well.
Where's it set, and how is it being done?
Well, we've set it so that the mechanicals are folks you would find walking down the street at, you know, outside Home Depot or Lowe's, those sorts of places. The court are celebrity type of folks, so it explores the way that modern society is sort of fascinated by celebrity. And the lovers are also fascinated by celebrity, just kind of kids that you would find hanging out in Portland.
It's such a fun show to do, isn't
it?
Especially
it's a family favorite for a reason.
Oh, it definitely is. It's just funny. And you're playing the role of Bottom, and talk about funny. I mean, are you actually going to wear a jackass head? I mean, do you get to be turned into this, you know, jackass?
Well,
spoiler.
Some would say
spoiler.
I'm already there. But but yes, we have the ass head going on, and it's
the jackass head.
Sorry, FCC. It's a thing.
It's totally.
We've got a Portland spin on it. The head is actually a modified bicycle helmet, so there's a little bit of homegrown there.
Very much of a connection there.
A little bit, yeah.
You're going to get a laugh out of that. So much is being done as far as Shakespeare with this two-year commitment, and a few companies are, but very few of them are really making it free to the public, as Portland Actors Ensemble is, and outdoors, too.
Yes, there's the original Practice Shakespeare Festival and Willamette Shakespeare that also perform outdoors. Willamette this year working with Northwest Classical on 12th Night, and Opsfest has their entire collection of plays that they do. But as far as fully produced plays inside Portland, it's hard to get free because there are a lot of costs involved with putting those shows up.
So. Oh, a lot. And so do you think that's the staying power, though, or one of the staying powers of the Portland Actors Ensemble? I mean, 45 years and
45
strong.
45 years. It's an awful long time. It's older than I am, and we're still going strong and growing. And I think that part of what has made it a Portland tradition is that families that can't necessarily afford $40, $50, $60 a ticket. I mean, even some of the smaller theaters charge dozens of dollars at a time. Can certainly afford to get a picnic, come out and sit on a blanket and watch a show out in the park.
I mean, it's such a great thing to offer every summer, too. So in the final moments, why do you think Portland has made this two-year commitment, Michael? I mean, for the Shakespeare plays. Is it Shakespeare overload?
Some would argue that it is. Some have argued that it is. But Portland has a fairly, I don't know, unique interest in the Bard for some reason. We've got some real treasures in terms of our artists in town and their connection to it. And we've got Shakespeare companies here and there and people that dabble in Shakespeare. So it sort of seemed natural. We were all doing these Shakespeare plays anyway. Grant Turner from Northwest Classical came up with this idea that we should do them all, and we should do them all lickety-split. So,
do you know if any other cities in the country are doing?
No. As far as I know, as far as what I've heard and read from the Complete Works project, we are kind of the only group maybe in the world that is trying to accomplish this in this short period of time. Because, you know, you got 37 plays, you got all those sonnets and lyric poems and
that's
stuff like that.
That's a lot of a commitment.
It's a lot of stuff. So yeah, it's a difficult project. There's still a few orphan plays that we're trying to attach to productions, but we have every confidence that it will all happen by the 400th anniversary of his death in 2016.
Well, you know, Shakespeare is meant to be performed.
Yes.
Out loud.
Yes.
With actors reading.
Yes.
Or performing it. You know, either one. So in the time remaining, what is you guys' love affair with Shakespeare? Matt, give me a big plug. Why do you like Shakespeare?
Words can't describe, isn't that sad? I just got into him a couple years ago, and I don't know, it was kind of like catching a fantastic illness.
Andrea?
This is my first Shakespeare production, and I'm learning to love Shakespeare. I mean, I've always enjoyed watching and reading it,
but now it's
to
time,
perform it,
right?
It's a whole nother ball of wax.
It really is. You're working all these new muscles, brain and physical and vocal, and
true.
I'm sure you're doing it well.
But it's beautiful. It's beautiful to work with characters that are so full and rich. Passionate.
Definitely, I think very complex characters. Elizabeth, what's your love affair?
I think I like epics. I've always been drawn to them, and epics with strong language components.
And multiple stories
and multiple
characters.
I like big stories.
All right.
He's the best at big stories.
Michael?
The characters, from an audience viewpoint, from an actor's viewpoint especially, getting to really explore the depth of those characters that he's created. It's just amazing.
Well, thank you all for being here. Michael Godsey, Elizabeth Huffman, Andrea White, and Matt DiBiasio. Break legs this summer, all of you. Portland Actors Ensemble. For a complete schedule of Shakespeare shows they're performing, visit portlandactors.org. And I have all that info at stageandstudio.org. So now we started a summer series of original audio art stories, and I want to talk to you about that. They're from recent graduates of Mount Hood Community College's Integrated Media Program. And the next piece that I'm going to present is by Sean Lewis Phillipson, who has an audio diary of a day in the life with Asperger's syndrome. Asperger's is often considered to be a high-functioning form of autism, but it can also lead to difficulties interacting socially. People repeat behaviors, and there's a little bit of social clumsiness there that those who have Asperger's usually think that they are fitting in, and they may have interactions with others, but they don't know how exactly to do it, and it could be socially awkward, not understanding conventional social rules, or they seem to have a lack of empathy or are unengaged in conversation. Well, Sean Lewis Phillipson has this story, and it's titled My Date with Asperger's.
Another day to get dressed and to get ready for school.
My name is Sean Lewis Phillipson. I am 23 years old, and this is my date with Asperger's. Having Asperger's is difficult for me. My definition of Asperger's is having a hard time being social with friends and shyness. At first, I thought it was a disease, but learning about it now, I still think it is a disease. I isolate myself from other people because it's not like, you know, I don't want to appreciate the support from all my friends and family. It's just what I do. I fiddle around with my hands, sometimes put my fist to my teeth and lightly punching it, and dancing to music with my eyes and hands when I walk. I don't drive at all because I take public transportation. I spoke to my friend and classmate Jacob Rozoff to discuss his brother's Asperger's and his impact on life.
Fifth or sixth grade, that's when he was diagnosed. We always knew that he was very special. I mean, like, he was just a very unique guy. He was very different. He was always so different that I think it was weird for him to be a part of something. He looks at it now as kind of a blessing. Like, because he has Asperger's, you know, he's kind of more capable to do these unique things, you know, and he's driven in what he wants to do. It's always pushed him in a direction to be passionate about what he does.
I spoke with my friend Jaylen Datamore about her ADHD because it relates to my Asperger's and how it impacted her job.
I thought it was going to help more than it did. It turned out it didn't, but that really sort of had a lot to do with where I was working, you know, in particular, too. I'd certainly run into other folks who'd lost jobs because of it, which I eventually did. And just with the stress level I was dealing with, I just couldn't keep everything straight, you know, and that's sort of what, that's really what led to losing my job.
Come into my house and experience what my life is like at home.
No, it's like Jonah's not a little kid. He's like, I think he's 9 years old.
That's my 5-year-old cousin Adam. He doesn't have Asperger's, but he likes to talk. When he talks too much, it gets annoying to me, and I don't care about what he says. I'm sorry, but that's the danger of having a child at home. And even this. Adam is like every other child. He has the gimmies. When he doesn't do what he is told or does not get what he wants, he gets spanked or whipped. His screaming irritates the heck out of me. My brain automatically turns to resentment around Adam. The reason why he's crying is because he wants to be with his mom. Like him, I was separated from my mom as a child. When he lives at my house, the rules are strict and the expectations are high. You can even add the dog barking to the list of noise that is sensitive.
Come upstairs to my room and take a look what's inside.
I have a picture here on my desk. It's my amazing girlfriend, Anna.
No, you beat me. You can't say. Well, you beat me the whole entire time. You can't say anything. You can't back that one up.
You're in trouble, Sharon.
I'll call her Princess. She's really pretty. I've been her friend for 9 years, and we have dated now for 6 months and still going strong. We've been walking around Waterfront Park on some sunny, cool days. I'll go over to your house and play some Monopoly. We'll have some lunch together and, on rare occasions, eat dinner, either at her house or elsewhere. But with all that in mind, I love her very much. I really do. And I enjoy having her fun with her, my one and only princess, Anna.
What I like to do is go bowling, write poetry, go on Twitter and Facebook. I often talk with my best friend, Matthew, who I've known for, gosh, how long? Over a decade. And he's like a big brother to me. I'll play some sports games, and on occasion I'll post my photography and video clips on Instagram, just for me to have a little bit of fun. My career goal is to be a radio sports broadcaster. My first start in broadcasting came in 2008 covering high school football. Here's a clip of my first game called in 2008, and notice how nervous I was.
Yeah, that was a pretty good try for the Techmen, but they can do a little better, but as the game progresses to grow on, they can figure out some good plays.
I'll admit, during the first few games, I was nervous. It's hard to get a feel for the pace of football when it goes so slow. As weeks went on, my general manager and sports coordinator doubted my ability to call games. As time gone, I got better. From being a shy, timid teen to a strong, confident, mature adult. Now, here is a basketball call I did in 2010, where former Benson High School guard, now University of Washington sophomore guard, Andrew Andrews, made a game-tying shot.
Looking the inbound. Techmen have no timeouts. They kick it over to Andrews. 4 seconds. Andrews for the tie. Bam! Andrews hits a three. And we're going to OT. 26 points. A big shot for Andrews. A 28-footer straight away.
That call was arguably the best call I have ever done to this day. If I ever get to the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, I don't want to be recognized as having Asperger's Syndrome, unless if it means for history purposes. I want to get into the Hall of Fame for the hard work and commitment to broadcasting. It's my destiny to be a radio sportscaster.
For my date with Asperger's, I am Sean Lewis Phillipson, Portland, Oregon.
Up ahead goes Holt, one on two.
And that piece was produced by Sean Lewis Phillipson, recent graduate of Mount Hood Community College's Integrated Media Program. Before we go today, an announcement, a shout-out for Invasion, directed by Antonio Sonera. Invasion is an uproarious tornado of words, images, and ideas, and it's all centered around an unknown ethnic origin, and the play assaults the deepest prejudices about identity, race, and language. And it's been called hilarious, unsettling, and poignant. Invasion returns with the original cast to Milagro Theater this week, and it closes this week. Showtimes are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 7:30 p.m., and a late-night performance Friday, June 27th. For tickets, visit badasstheater.org or call 503-358-4660. All performances are at Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark in Portland. And you can find out more at badasstheater.org. And we have a pair of tickets to offer to the third caller here at KBOO at 503-231-5106, 231-5106. Third caller can get a pair of tickets to Invasion. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to KBOO engineer Janet Anderson. And I'll have the show later online today at stageandstudio.org.
Have a go. I'd like to be a gallery. Put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Bruce Gunter, the chief curator at the Portland Art Museum. Bruce is here to talk about the art of the Louvre's Tuileries Gardens. Welcome to KBOO, Bruce.
Nice to be here, Joseph. Thank you for asking.
This show is about a garden, but it's about art within a garden. But we need to know why there's a garden in the first place. And a lot of people know the Tuileries in downtown Paris, but we don't really know which building was there first. What was the palace?
It's an exciting exhibition because